Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
It's not just about watching the game, it's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it, it's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pick up your book bags. Grab your notebooks. It's time to go on campus with Denton.
Hey, give me my theme music.
All right, Denton. College football review from Saturday, maybe the Friday night game, which there was a good one. It was a blowout, but it was a good one going in. It was not an anticipated week three of the college football season, but we almost had the biggest upset, not Northern Illinois over Notre Dame, but there was almost a massive upset of number one.
Yeah, that was probably the most surprising thing of the week. There actually was a big upset on Friday, which is UNLV over Kansas.
Love UNLV right now.
Which was, I mean, that was a fun one. They got a guy, a gamer, at the quarterback spot. They but the do. Big news of the week is that there's now a new number one because Georgia nearly gave it away against Kentucky, and despite the fact that Quinn Ewers got hurt and left the game for Texas, they are now the number one ranked team in the country. We got to see Arch Manning come in, and he played really, really well. Now, UTSA is not the UTSA of the past, you know, 2-3 years when they were one of the better non-Power 5 teams, so Texas did what they were supposed to do to a team like UTSA. But for a game this year where there are not a lot of good quarterbacks, it seems like Texas has an embarrassment of riches with two good quarterbacks. And by the way, Arch Manning has some speed. I did not anticipate that from somebody with a last name Manning.
Yeah, he's athletic. So a couple of things. Number one, is Georgia Georgia? I don't think they are.
What do you say? No, they are absolutely not. This weekend was some sort of validation for me, who never fully understood the Carson Beck hype. You know, he's projected as the number one overall pick. I mean, if Ron Rivera gets a job, he'll draft him and say that. But he was projected as the number one overall pick. He was a Heisman front runner. And I watched him last year, and there were some moments where he looked good. He looked like a competent quarterback. He looked like a good quarterback in the SEC. But I never saw a guy that was a legit game changer. It's really easy to look good at Georgia. It's really, really easy to look good when you have so much talent on every side of the ball and your defense is insane. It's a massive safety net to have. And Georgia's defense is still pretty darn good, but they're not like this. They're much more human, I would say, than I think maybe some people anticipated that they would be. They're still a really good team. I don't know who they have on their schedule this weekend. I'm praying for them because they're going to get destroyed. I mean, Georgia's going to be coming into their next game with a vengeance based off of how this Kentucky thing went. But Carson Beck, when you look at the list of good quarterbacks or great quarterbacks in college football this year, he's not on it. Admittedly, it's a small list. I mean, you could probably, I could come up with maybe five quarterbacks that I like really, really like right now in college football. Whereas this time last year, we're throwing in like Sam Hartman. They're going 10 deep getting to Notre Dame's quarterback, which that's just not the case this year.
Agreed on Carson Beck. Felt the same way last year. Definitely feel the same way. By the way, they both are taking, Georgia and Bam are taking this weekend off prior to their matchup a week from Saturday in Tuscaloosa. Georgia-Bama, for those of you wondering, a week from tomorrow. And by the way, there's a game down the road, Georgia at Texas. You know, that's a conference game on October 19th. If Georgia went to Bama and won, that could be a matchup of number one versus number two. I can't remember the last time we had a one versus two, unless it was Ohio State, Michigan, maybe recently. You can tell me, did we have a Bama LSU one versus two?
I'm looking that up now because I know.
Regular season.
Yeah, regular season. There was a time where it's called what? The Immaculate game, I think is what it is.
What, Catholics versus convicts? Are you talking about that?
No, it's like when you get a number one versus a number two. There's a certain kind of name for it. I think the last time we got it was 2011 with Bama and LSU.
Bama and LSU. But I mean, Georgia's schedule last year.
Oh no, no, we got in 2019 with LSU and Bama. They were number one, number two.
Was that was Burrow in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, it was Burrow in Tuscaloosa, and then Clemson was three.
Are you sure that was 1-2?
It's showing right now was the last time that we got one. Oh,
that
you know what? We got one 2 years ago when Tennessee reached number two and they got shellacked by Georgia.
That was a one versus two?
That sure didn't feel like a one versus two. Georgia put the smackdown on them. That was when Hendon Hooker was quarterback.
Yeah, it was like 27-0, then it ended up like 27-13 or something. I had Georgia that day. I just remember that because it was a big number. Georgia's schedule, okay, they nearly lose at Kentucky. So they have Bama a week from Saturday. Then they have Texas October 19th. They also have to play at Ole Miss. They have three teams in the top five in the country all on the road on their schedule. This is not last year's schedule for Georgia. It's not last year's team. I agree with you. They were life and death with Kentucky. Now, I heard Kirby after the game talk about how their first road SEC game the last few years, he said last year it was at Auburn, and I remember that game being close. In 2022, I think he talked about a game at Missouri, which was really close. So he was making the point, road games in league play, your first one is always difficult, but if you can survive it, it's fine. We'll see. I'm not a big Carson Beck fan at this point. But, man, there are some heavyweight matchups down the road because of Oklahoma and Texas in the SEC. All right, what do you have next?
All right, so some of the other things that really caught my eye. One, I was really bummed that Tyler Van Dyke got hurt for Wisconsin, but I do think that was the best that we've seen Jalen Milroe play in terms of confidence. And
Wisconsin stinks.
Yeah, they're not great. I do think it would have been a little different if Van Dyke was in the game, just because I think they would have had a little more sustainability on drives offensively. Bama still crushes them, but I did think it was the best that Jalen Milroe had looked this year.
Yeah, so Carson Beck is one guy, and I think Milroe for me is the other one. I don't see it. Like, I see Carson Beck moving out and late in the first round, if not out of the first round, and I don't see Milroe. To me, it's yours. Sanders, although I think there's some question marks around Sanders, Shedeur Sanders. And I think we're going to see Cam Ward kind of fly up draft boards here. I don't know where he is right now, but the Miami quarterback is really dynamic. And we got to see, you know, they haven't played anybody really, because Florida in the swamp right now is, it's kind of sad to see how bad they are. I don't know how Napier's held onto the job. I would assume they're going to buy him out shortly. But yours is the one. And, you know, you mentioned Texas in, you know, supplanting Georgia as the number one team. What is the injury status of yours? Not that they're not going to be really good with Arch Manning, but yours was so good at Michigan, as he was last year in Tuscaloosa. I still think they need him. And they're better off with him right now than they are Arch Manning in terms of a national championship run.
So according to ESPN, it's an ab injury that is not as serious as initially feared. So he's week to week. So we will see what that means. He's likely going to be out this weekend against Louisiana Monroe. But hopefully by the time you get to that Georgia matchup, he's going to be back in. By the way, you're asking about a big board stuff. So I pulled up a Pro Football Focus big board. Obviously, it's really, really early. But they have Carson Beck still as the top-rated quarterback. They got Shedeur Sanders. Are you sitting down for number three?
Don't tell me yet.
My jaw was on the floor.
Give me a hint.
It's an SEC quarterback.
It's an SEC. It's not Nussmeier.
It is not Nussmeier.
It is. Well, did you say Quinn Ewers?
It is not Quinn Ewers. Quinn Ewers is four on this list, according to
PFF. Is it Jackson
PFF.
Dart?
It is not Jackson Dart. Jackson Dart is way, way down this list.
Is it Cook?
No. It's Connor Wegman from A&M.
Oh, God. Well, this is early.
I mean, this is way too early.
He got benched.
He is not good. He's not good.
Yeah.
Milroe, to me, is a really good college player. I don't know what he's going to pan out like in the NFL, but he's a really good college player because he can do it with his arm
and his legs. Highly touted quarterback, went to Texas A&M, got paid big time, and the more athletic quarterback has already basically taken his spot.
Pretty much. By the way, just to completely destroy my perception, your perception, they have Graham Mertz on here, so I'm going to go ahead and click out of this.
That's too early. PFF ranking of the 25 class.
But
I want to ask you about Tennessee because mm-hmm. they play Oklahoma in Norman Saturday night.
Right.
That is a conference game, by the way, an SEC game. Tennessee, so I actually took a picture of this because I wanted to be able to talk about it without forgetting. At halftime in their game on Saturday against Kent State, they were up 65-0 at halftime. And had 541 yards and 21 first downs in a half. They also, 30-0, kicked an onside kick.
There were a couple onside kicks and blowouts this weekend.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing against a MAC team like that. But how real is Tennessee, and what kind of chance do you give Oklahoma on Saturday night?
Tennessee is very real. This offense, to me, is very similar to what it was in 2022 when Hendon Hooker was at the helm, mm-hmm. and the running game is really impressive. So they have a couple different directions they could beat you on offense, which for years Tennessee did not have, and I don't know that many teams in college football have the ceiling offensively that Tennessee does. The problem is, like, what you do to Kent State isn't really all that impressive. Now, I would look at that NC State game. While I don't particularly love NC State, I certainly don't love their offense. Doing what they did to a Power 4 team is more impressive to me. I'm excited for that matchup this weekend. It's not my favorite game of the weekend. I'll share that with you in a second. But I'm excited to see, like, just how real they are. I think they're real. I think Nico Y's a pretty good quarterback. But really, I trust Josh Heifel. It's just more a question of, are we getting smokescreened by, like, the Kent States and the, small school U that they're paying millions of dollars to beat up in, like, week one? I'm excited to see what they're going to do against Oklahoma. For Oklahoma, your best defense is really going to be keeping their offense off of the field, which is going to be really tough for Jackson Arnold. I think he has the potential to be a good quarterback. He is their highly touted five-star guy. He ain't looked that good so far. They struggled offensively against Houston 2 weeks ago. And if you can't score against Tennessee, like, regardless of how you feel about that, they're going to score. They're going to put up a lot of points. You're going to have to put up at the very least 28 points to be able to hang with Tennessee. I don't know that Oklahoma can do that.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma was, they were up five, and Tulane had the ball in the fourth quarter. They're struggling offensively, but I think they're very good defensively. That should be a scene Saturday night in Norman. What else did you want to get to?
So one of the bigger games that you and I talked about last week was Boston College and Missouri. Yeah. There's a lot of good players in this one. Obviously, Luther Burden III is the best wide receiver in college football. There's a lot of good ones. You got obviously Travis Hunter, although he should play defensive back at the NFL because his instincts are crazy. You got T-Mac at Arizona, which he's their big number four for the Wildcats. He is awesome. That's a name if you're a Commanders fan, you want a wide receiver in the draft. Keep an eye on him over there at Arizona. But the way that Boston College battled was really, really impressive. But I also love the way that Missouri battled. They hadn't really been tested this year, and they're in a really unique spot because they're ranked very highly. A lot of that is based off of last season, and they bring a lot of guys back this season. But they're in the SEC, and their schedule is, it's not like Florida's schedule. They're on the road against Texas A&M in a couple weeks. Then they're on the road against Bama and Oklahoma at home in back-to-back weeks. Like, they're going to have a couple of really difficult games coming up on their schedule here. So seeing that they were able to kind of hang with a team that's in a similar position as they are, not that Boston College is fighting for a college football playoff spot, but a similar position as they are, I thought that was a strong win for Missouri. But, man, Bill O'Brien coach teams are really, really good.
Really, really good. I had Missouri. I had, you know, I put them out in the smell test. I had them personally, and they actually were driving up 24-14 late. They were, you know, converted a couple of fourth downs. They could have put the game away and then gave up a touchdown drive and ended up having a competitive game at the end. I think they're well coached. I think Brady Cook is a really solid decision maker at quarterback. I mean, how many years has he been in college football? Can somebody tell me that? It seems like he's been at Missouri for about 15 years. Luther Burden, as you said, is certainly up there among the best receivers in the game. Let me mention Ty Felton at Maryland is one of the best receivers in college football. He's third in the nation in receiving yards. He is third in the nation in receptions. And he is having a phenomenal season. I would just say about Maryland's win over Virginia Saturday night, man, did they need that, because the Michigan State loss felt like two. You can't, you know, there's that saying that, you know, it's one of those cliche coach sayings where when you lose a game, you know, like Maryland lost to Michigan State, the coach says you can't lose to Michigan State twice. You know, you can't lose to them twice, meaning you can't let it carry over into the following week. And I think Maryland had that game in so many different ways. They had a chip shot field goal to go up 10, and they didn't go for a fourth and one, and Maryland fans were screaming about it. And I'm like, well, they hadn't run the ball all day, and they had a chip shot field goal to go up 10. So I actually didn't have a problem with that Loxley decision. But they were in trouble in the first half against Virginia. I mean, Virginia turned the ball over four times in the game, and three of them, I think, were in the first half, and Maryland was down 13-7. They didn't take advantage of anything. But they're just more talented than Virginia across the board, and it just kind of, they wore down. Billy Edwards got hot. Ty Felton, 9 more catches for 117 yards. They've got other playmakers, too. That's a good win from where they were at halftime. I was concerned. I thought they were going down at halftime, in part because, did you know that Virginia went off as a 2.5-point favorite, Denton, in that game?
Yeah, that line swung like crazy towards the Saturday.
So much sharp money on UVA. Maryland's got Villanova, then they're at Indiana, Northwestern, and then they get USC. So, look, you know, Loxley has found a way, even with some devastating losses, like last year when they lost at home to Illinois. They lost to Northwestern on the road, games that they thought they should win. Michigan State, by the way, is undefeated, and they're clearly better than I think people thought they would be. But it's like, you know, their two wins, it's Florida Atlantic, and they played somebody that was terrible this week. They actually play Boston College, I'm pretty sure, this Saturday, which is interesting. But Loxley's going to figure out a way with the talent that he's got. They're going to win 7 or 8 games. They'll be in a bowl game again. It just sucks that they didn't beat Michigan State, because you would have been building towards maybe a game against USC in October. And you didn't mention USC. They beat so when they beat Utah State last weekend 48-0, I didn't think anything of it until Utah State on Saturday at home against Utah had them in trouble in that game. You know, that was a 7-point game in the fourth quarter. So maybe we have to start paying attention to SC a little bit more. I like Miller Moss. They clearly have speed. They always do.
Yeah, they definitely
have
speed.
We didn't talk about the best game of the day by far, which was LSU's comeback against South Carolina in Columbia, down 17-0. The only thing I'll tell you is, as bad as LSU's defense was last year, it ain't much better this year.
It's not much better. They just don't have a quarterback that can run. By the way, that Utah State, that was a mini Zach Wilson playing, not Cam Rising at quarterback.
I know it was. Is Cam Rising out again?
God, I hope not. I want him to. That Oklahoma State Utah game is my personal favorite this upcoming weekend, but I need to have Cam Rising in it.
Yeah, Utah, Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
I think you said Utah State, Oklahoma. Maybe you didn't. Yes, a huge game, and Utah State's favored. Utah, you've got me saying Utah State. Utah is favored in this game, and I don't think they looked like world beaters with Zach Wilson's brother quarterbacking.
No, they did. But that LSU South Carolina game that you mentioned, you know, I questioned. I was like, why is game day going to South Carolina when you could go to Missouri for the Boston College Missouri game? And I quickly was proven wrong. But LSU's defense did not get. If they got better, it was in very small increments from last year. The only difference is now that I mentioned is Garrett Nussmeier, who is he's a good thrower of the football, but there is zero threat with his legs, like absolutely zero, to the point where I was watching that game in the second half, and you know they're lining up in like what you would traditionally see a read option or RPO kind of look. And I'm like, at least once, this Nussmeier guy just has to keep it. Because the DNs for South Carolina are crashing on the running back. Even if you got, like, Tom Brady speed, you'll still get a couple of yards because they're not expecting you to run at all. I kind of was pulling for South Carolina at the tail end of it, although I was a little upset at their quarterback in Sellers ditching the goggles for contacts. I mean,
got hurt too in that game.
He did get hurt, but I mean, ditching the goggles, he was the rec specs king. For those of us that have four eyes, I like a guy that wears rec specs, so I was a little hurt that he went with the contacts.
The running back that LSU had, I think he's a true freshman, number 29. I forget his name because the other guy that had the torn ACL last year also got hurt after the SC game, where he looked good. Mm-hmm. But that freshman running back, what's his name?
Why am I blanking on his name? Caden Durham.
Number 29.
Caden Durham.
He was excellent. But the other thing is Kyren Lacy just going to be the next of the LSU receivers?
Yeah. Yeah, they just need to throw to him more. I mean, he only had 5 catches for 63 yards, but he did have a touchdown. He is next up on the list of good receivers.
Is he projected first round?
Hold on, let me go find my... I would assume that he is.
I mean, the LSU receiver train is just amazing. All right, you can find that. We can come back with it. You got some news. We got some things to get to, and then we'll probably finish it up with another chance for you guys to weigh in on the question of the day, which is, if you were talking to somebody who didn't see the first two games, how would you describe Jaden Daniels' play in those first two games? If you want to get on the phone lines, they are open, 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app, and I want to tell you about Window Nation's September savings opportunity. If you're thinking about new windows because your windows are old, and if they're 10 years of age or older, they're too old, they're not efficient enough, you're spending too much money on your air conditioning and then heating bills in wintertime, not to mention your home probably doesn't look as nice as it could. Right now, if you've been thinking about new windows, give Window Nation a call at 866-90-NATION. Go to windownation.com. Mention my name. You'll get a free estimate. So there's nothing to lose. They're not going to pressure you after they give you an estimate. It's fine if you get the estimate and you say, you know what, I'm not going to do windows right now. Just get the estimate and get the access to the current deal, which is buy two, get two free with no money down, no payments, and no interest for 24 months. Add to that, they're giving you a lifetime warranty on the windows. It's their promise that your new windows are built to last for years to come. Right now, take advantage of this exclusive offer. Buy two, get two free. That means you're paying half price on the windows with no money down, no payments, and no interest charged for 24 months. So you're not paying anything for 2 years. And when you start paying, you're paying half price. Don't wait. Call Window Nation today to schedule your free in-home estimate. Visit windownation.com or call them at 866-90-NATION. And remember, to get this exclusive September offer, tell them that Kevin Sheehan sent you.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hitting the news you might have missed. It's Denton's Daily News.
All right, Denton, what do you want to start with?
All right, we'll start with a couple NFL stories. The big one yesterday was that Bryce Young gets benched in Carolina in favor of Andy Dalton. And this comes after 18 games as a starter in the NFL and playing technically in like his third offense with the switch that happened midway through last season. Kind of a weird situation going down there in Carolina. Remember, they moved heaven and earth to get him, and they benched him after 18 games.
Yeah, let's just start with this. David Tepper has replaced Dan Snyder as the worst owner in the NFL and one of the worst owners in sports. I read this earlier this morning. In the history of the Carolina Panthers franchise, 10 coaches they have had. Tepper has hired, fired, or promoted 7 of those during his brief ownership tenure. He bought the team in 2018. He oversaw that dumb trade where they basically traded everything to move up to number one to take Bryce Young. He oversaw the departure and trading of Christian McCaffrey, of losing Brian Burns and not choosing to trade him a year early. He's a terrible owner. He gave Frank Reich, a quarterback guru, 10 games before he bailed on him. I would guess that the only thing most of you would agree with was him firing Ron Rivera, which he did in the first full season of owning the team. He is a hideous owner. And, you know, there have been the incidents with him throwing, what did he throw, a cup of something at a fan during
water,
a game?
Yeah.
He threw something at a fan in a restaurant in Charlotte. He has sued different people for, you know, what he describes as defaming remarks. This guy is an absolute mess, and the Carolina franchise is in big, big trouble. So I go back to something, and I know I've said this before. We had Stanford Steve on the show 2 years ago, 3 years ago, after a big Bama game that he was there for game day, or he was there for something. It may have been one of the playoff games. And he came on with us like 2 days later, and he goes, oh my God. He goes, the most amazing thing about being on the sideline for that game is just how small Bryce Young is. Like, he's listed, he goes, he's listed at like 5'10", 5'11". There's no way he's 5'10". He's like 5'8 or 5'9", and he's nowhere near like 200 pounds, which I guess he was listed as. And I was reading something about the history of kind of smaller quarterbacks in the game. This was our guy, Ben Solak, who writes for ESPN.com. He does a good job with this stuff. And since 1970, the year of the merger, there have been 178 quarterbacks in total that have started 50 games in the league. So if you start 50 games in the league, you've become a quarterback that, you know, you're having a career. 50 games is, you know, essentially three seasons, just over three seasons. And even if you go back to the 70s when they're playing 14 games, it's still a little bit less than three seasons. But anyway, he writes, exactly 4 of the 178 quarterbacks since 1970 to start at least 50 games were shorter than 6 feet tall. Doug Flutie, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, and Pat Hayden. And he writes, it is hard to play quarterback when you're lacking height. It affects everything about the operation, how you take dropbacks, where you stand in the pocket, how you stand in the pocket, which routes you can throw, which routes you don't throw, and how your throwing motion works. And then he gets into the issues that Bryce Young is struggling with because of his height. By the way, I would add that it's not just with him, his height, it's his frame. He is, I think they list him at 195, 200, but I think a lot of people that have been around him say he's more like I think his program height is 5'10", 204. Here it is. By the way, that alone makes him one of the smallest quarterbacks in the history of the game since they started measuring things like that in 1970, literally and figuratively. But most people would say standing next to him, he's more like 5'9 and a buck 80. And yet, he was so good at Bama. He was so good in the interviews at the combine, and then the 30 visits and the different pro days. People discussed him leading into that draft in 2023 as one of the smartest quarterbacks and one of the fastest processing quarterbacks that they had ever evaluated. Now you can tell me if I'm wrong, but the 2023 NFL draft, if they had taken C.J. Stroud at number one, Houston would have taken Bryce Young at number two. Do you disagree with that?
No, I'd say if Stroud was off the board, then yeah, they'd probably take Bryce Young.
How many teams of the 32, if they had had a quarterback need in 2023, would have evaluated Bryce Young as the pick over C.J. Stroud? I say many. I would say 2/3 of the teams minimum.
I'd say probably half. I would lower that down to probably half of the teams that would have needed, because I think that there was something about C.J. Stroud. I liked Bryce Young over C.J. Stroud coming out of college because I thought we saw it more in college than we do with C.J. Stroud. But I think people are starting to shy away from the super small quarterback. And he is a super small quarterback. And unfortunately, Kevin, this kind of kills it in Carolina. Like, I don't know how often we see a guy that was a former pick, a number one overall pick, the way he was, get benched and then rebound and ultimately come back and become the face of the franchise. So, this is almost them pulling the plug totally on Bryce Young.
So, all right, so let's put that to the side. I mean, you say half, I say 2/3. The bottom line is this was a massive whiff, and it would have been whiffed on by a lot of teams in the league had they had number one overall. Remember, Anthony Richardson ended up going in the top five in that draft, but he wasn't supposed to until sort of the weeks leading up to the draft.
Right.
And because he was considered to be so raw. And Levis, who honestly I didn't like at Kentucky, and I just haven't seen anything that resembles an NFL quarterback it's early. I get it. It's very early. But he was actually the one that dropped significantly based on where people thought he might get taken. But now you go to this situation. You put a tiny quarterback in an organization that is poorly owned, poorly structured, poorly managed. You do hire a guy in Frank Reich and you know to be the head coach with this young quarterback. And I don't know, maybe it's Reich who said to Tepper at some point, this is not going to work. Remember, the rumors were that Reich liked Stroud,
yeah,
not Young. Reich wanted Stroud. Tepper wanted Bryce Young. So they went with the owner's choice, of course. We're used to that around here. The organization is just a gross structural organization because the owner meddles so much, and he's gone through all of these coaches. So it's a terrible situation for him to go in. It's a bad football team on offense for him to have gone to, and I hope that they move on from him. I hope that they move him. Here's my question to you. Was this a Dave Canales choice that Tepper went along with, or did Tepper say, I've seen enough, make the switch?
That's a great question. So there were some fingers pointed because I think after the game this weekend, Canales said that Bryce Young is the quarterback, and then 24 hours later, Bryce Young is benched. But it's led to a lot of people, Kevin, on social media pointing to this year's quarterback class and saying, what if Carolina waits with the expectation that going number one overall next year, 2026, is going to be Arch Manning? And I would stomp that and nip it in the bud now. If
the Mannings won't let David Tepper. Just like if Washington drafted Arch Manning a few years ago, or the number, like any Manning that came out, they would not allow them to play for this franchise.
They are not letting him play for that Looney Tune. That's just not going to happen. So they're in trouble.
The Peyton Manning didn't want to compete with Eli in the NFC East when Mike Shanahan was interested in Peyton Manning and they were having serious conversations. Ultimately, Peyton wanted to live in Denver and didn't want to be in the organization that he saw as probably a short shelf life for the coach that he was good friends with in Mike Shanahan. So I agree with you. You'll end up with, you know, Arch Manning saying, nope, I'll just go back to school. And get paid massive NIL money.
Which would be great.
They're not,
be funny.
They're not going to have a chance. Look, this is the conversation we have every year, you know, about young quarterbacks and the hit rate on these young quarterbacks. I mean, the hit rate is one out of every three, one out of every four, somewhere in that neighborhood. And at the same time, you can't discount them once they do fail early. Now, you might be able to do that with Bryce Young because of the history of short quarterbacks, and that it's just very hard to play quarterback in the NFL when you're short. You know, Drew Brees was not listed on those quarterbacks because Drew Brees, his program height was 6 feet. Even though he was a shorter quarterback. I saw that last year with Sam Howell. I mean, he was listed as 6 feet, 6'1". He played small, though, in the pocket. He looked smaller than that. But, man, look at Sam Darnold. Look at Geno Smith. Look at some of the guys that you just completely bail on. You know, in recent, like, let's just go back 5, 6, 7 years, right? People have kind of bailed on Daniel Jones. Okay, we'll see. People bailed on Drew Locke. He might get the opportunity in New York. They bailed on Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield, two of the top three picks in 2018. And look at where they are now. You know, Mitch Trubisky's been bailed on. Deshaun Watson's a whole different story altogether. Jared Goff was essentially bailed on. Look at where he is now. Carson Wentz was anointed. And look at where he is right now. Jacoby Brissett was in that draft in 2016, and he's, you know, moved around and finally found a spot as a starter. This is where, like, you know, I'm like Jameis Winston, just because I loved him in that draft. Can't he be the starting quarterback in Cleveland?
I would love
it. He might be at some point.
He might be.
It's just, you know, Derek Carr, 2014. Look, he had some early success, then he went away, and here he comes back. This position, Geno Smith, 2013, journeyman forever, and then at 30 years old, he gets in a system with, by the way, Dave Canales, the coach in Carolina, who really helped resurrect his career. Maybe that's why we keep getting these occasional, you know, social media, hey, I'm available, from RG3. And let me just mention Andy Dalton, who was drafted in 2011, all right? Andy Dalton's been a solid NFL quarterback. Andy Dalton is 33 years old, I think. I bet you the Panthers are much more competitive with Andy Dalton, a quarterback.
I bet you're feeling way better about that 5.5 ticket. He's 36, by the way.
Oh, is he 36?
Yeah, he's old. He got a beard now, though.
Right, he's taken 2011. Because the Carolina roster, offensively not great. Defensively, pretty good, although Derek Brown was hurt last week. So, I feel badly for Bryce Young, but just the worst organization to have been drafted by. Just like for us, you know, RG3 would have, you know, that wouldn't have worked out for him in a lot of places. but even a young kid with maturity issues, wrong organization for Dwayne Haskins, you know, rest his soul. Just the absolute wrong organization for him to come into, given that the owner picked him. it's so important. These young quarterbacks, they've got to end up in the right spot, right system, right people, right organizational front office, because it can really get messy for them, especially when you're 5'8 and 175 pounds. What else do you have?
All right, I was contemplating whether I wanted to do this story or not, and then I found out more information that's like kind of funny, but in like a horrifying way. P. Diddy's in police custody. He essentially surrendered himself following the sex trafficking probe that has been the big story for him in 2024, along with many things that were found when his homes were raided. The thing that stood out to me was authorities confiscated 1,000 bottles of baby oil or other lubricant products.
Well, I mean, maybe
the freak-offs were going crazy. 1,000 bottles.
1,000 bottles.
1,000.
Are we about to get into a shortage?
He's going to jail for a while.
This is going to be bad for him.
It's going to be bad for him. It's going to be bad for a lot of people. Because apparently,
thought he was already. I didn't think he was in jail, but hasn't he already been? So is he in jail now? Did he turn himself in?
He turned himself in for custody.
Have they posted bond? Is he back out?
I don't know that he will be given the opportunity for any sort of bond. Because multiple homes have been raided. That was like the beginning of the year. Multiple homes got raided, and then his lawyer said that he turned himself in. He did say his spirit was in a good place. I would refute that, but that's just me. But he turned himself in.
Who makes, I would imagine when it comes to baby oil, Johnson's is the number one.
Yeah,
product.
I think it's Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What? Anything else?
Just touching on some of the injuries that were official yesterday.
Pacheco.
Pacheco, 6 to 8 weeks.
Big loss.
Cooper Kupp on IR for the Rams. It feels like he's been injured every year.
So he and Puka are out.
He and Puka are out for at least four to 5 weeks.
The Rams are 0-2. They play San Francisco this week. They'll probably fall to 0-3, even though they host that game. I mean, there were expectations for the Rams this year. And this is what you can't predict before a season begins. They have been absolutely decimated in the first few weeks of the season with injuries. And they got run out of the building by the Arizona Cardinals. Now they get the 49ers coming off a loss. Good luck.
Although the 49ers are going to be without Debo. Thank God they got that Brandon Ayuk deal done, right?
What's the Debo injury?
He has a calf injury, so he's going to miss at least a couple of weeks. So that's Cooper
Kupp.
So
no Debo, no McCaffrey.
Right.
Although Jordan Mason's running pretty well.
He is. But Brandon Ayuk's going to have to be better. He hasn't struggled, per se, the first couple of weeks, but he has not put up any sort of jaw-dropping numbers the first 2 weeks. And you'll learn a lot about one Brock Purdy, who might get $65 million this offseason if he plays well.
You know what? Good point. That's a good point, because although I still think that they're just going to run the ball and Jordan Mason will end up with a buck 50 and it'll just make everything easier for Brock Purdy. It's just, it's the perfect system for him. But with no Debo, no Christian McCaffrey, yeah, and Trent, by the way, has been banged up on and off in these first two games. Let's see if he can strap it to. I mean, I don't think you have to do it against the Rams. What is the 49ers schedule? They go Rams, they go Patriots, Cardinals, Seahawks. They've got a game with the Chiefs on October 20th, this Super Bowl matchup. By the way, I was looking at Monday night games coming up. Do you know? I mean, this is kind of ABC, ESPN kind of lucking into it, but in 2 weeks, we get. Or 3 weeks, October 7th, we get Saints-Chiefs on Monday Night Football.
That is pretty nice. People were not thrilled, by the way, last night with ESPN's coverage of the game.
Why?
They said it was unbelievably favored towards Philadelphia.
I'll be honest with you. I don't get that because I guarantee you Philadelphia fans in particular, because Washington and Giant fans have been this way when it comes to Aikman. They've been so anti-Aikman over the years, saying that he's so biased against them. So last night you're saying he's so pro-Philadelphia. I watched the game. I didn't watch the Manning cast. I watched the game with both of them. I think Buck and Aikman do a good job. I think the most embarrassing broadcast of the weekend, and it pains me to say this because Mike Tirico is the absolute best, But listening to it, you almost have to turn the volume down now with a Chris Collinsworth broadcast. He was on his knees salivating in front of Caleb Williams, and it just made no sense. Look, Caleb Williams, I'm rooting for him. Gonzaga, local, D.C., I want him to do well. I had a chance to meet with him and do an event with him about a year ago, but he was not very good, and he was terrible in week one. Collinsworth was, people got after him on social media because when I talked about this yesterday morning, people sent me a bunch of the things. I mean, there was a whole thread on Collinsworth. That's a terrible listen now. But Tirico's so good, they got to put somebody else with him.
Well, they don't.
Please.
NBC doesn't have any. Their Notre Dame guy is Jason Garrett. I'm good on that. I don't need Jason Garrett on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, you know what, though? Honestly, I'd rather have a quarterback. I think quarterbacks...
Now, you know what they should do?
What?
They got to go get Greg Olsen out of that Fox deal. If Fox is going to move forward with Brady,
Olsen would be good.
Put Olsen with Mike Tirico. That'd be a hell of a listen.
There was a time when I actually kind of liked Collinsworth. He's a likable dude. I just... What he was looking at in this game with Caleb Williams was crazy. Like, everybody's like, am I watching a different game? I mean, he'd make one terrible play after another, and he made some good plays. And Collinsworth would be, but you know what? I saw what he saw. And even though he got sacked, and even though he threw it up for grabs and it got picked, I think his process, no, it was, he was, and it wasn't all his fault. They could not block Houston up. Houston's really good, I think. I think they're really good. Stroud's really good. And he's got receivers, man. Nico Collins and Steph Diggs and the tight end. I love Dalton Schultz, you know, with by the way, Joe Mixon there, although he got hurt the other night. They also have Cam Akers on that team. You know, Cam Akers, I think, has had 3 Achilles injuries and he's still going. That guy has come back from 3 different torn Achilles injuries. I think, look it up. I think it's 3. And he is a good runner. And a really good player. He just hasn't been able to stay healthy. All right, something Dan Quinn said yesterday I want to play for you when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. Dan Quinn, the day after the win over the Giants yesterday, had his weekly presser heading into, by the way, it'll be a different week this week. We'll get everybody moved back a day, I think, because of the Monday night game. But he was asked about Jaden Daniels' process right now at the line of scrimmage. Here's what he said.
Yeah, he's really got a lot of poise to him, Dave. And the reason I say that, decisions, he's very cool under it. There will definitely be some plays that he would like to have back in terms of staying in a progression, remaining a passer longer. And he's got the ability, so when he gets outside the pocket, he can still threaten the line of scrimmage and rip it down the field. When we start doing that as well, it'll open up even more big plays because the defender can't come on and converge where when he scrambles outside the pocket, he's going to be a runner in that space. So the ability to be dual threat when you're outside the pocket, that's a big deal. And fortunately for him, that is something that he does well. And we've seen it a bunch at practice, and as we're going into our second game and moving forward, I do think that's going to be one part of the game that you're really going to see take off for him, is remaining a passer, putting his eyes down the field first, and making some plays that way too.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, when we, earlier in the show, I kind of went through some of the things upon further review, looking at the All-22, and I talked about the third drive, first and 10 at their own 18. He took a sack for a one-yard loss, but he had the ability to progress to McCaffrey. For whatever reason, he didn't, but it was the next play, the play in which he took the big shot and then went out for a play with the wind knocked out of him. He scrambles for 14 yards. But if the eyes were down the field as he threatened that line of scrimmage, as Dan Quinn said, the ability to be dual threat when you're outside the pocket, that's a big deal. I guarantee you that that is a play that they said, look at Luke McCaffrey. And by the way, it's a perfect easy throw because you're moving right. It's a throw with your right arm back. you know, towards the left. You're not rolling left and throwing back to the right. And Luke McCaffrey is wide open for a 50-yard plus play, if not a score. Those are some that he's missed here in the first 2 weeks. But he made some of those in college, and you heard Quinn say he's made some of those, a bunch of those in practice. But I guarantee you that's a big emphasis with him through 2 weeks. As a scrambler, as a play extender, you can still throw the ball down the field. In fact, sometimes it's much easier to throw the ball down the field in those spots. Thanks to Rhett Lewis. He was great from the NFL Network. Chris Russell's up next.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.